Dear beloved Muslims, brothers and sisters, guests, friends,
praise be to Allah, guardian, evolver, cherisher, and sustainer of all the world. I bear witness that nothing is worthy of worship except the one God, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. I thank Allah for opportunity again to address our community, American Muslim Mission members, and our guests and friends on this fourth Sunday. In spite of the setback for many of us in terms of what we expected from society in general, from government administration, I think this is a very good day. I think it's a good time and a good day. And I just feel very good inside to know that I'm not alone in that kind of thinking. Praise be to Allah. I hope to finish what I have to say here today within about an hour. When we began our lecture, our khutbah as we call it, which means a speech, our lecture, with a purpose, not just talk without a purpose. We have a purpose when we talk. We began it with the name Allah, which satisfies our heart because we are believers. We are people of faith. We are rational people. We believe in living a rational life. We believe in all of the necessary supports that life must have, economic support, political support, but we don't put our complete trust in any of those supports. We put our complete trust in the Creator of it all. So I just want to make that plain from the very outset that we are people of faith. However, for the Bilalian people especially, and for the general society here in America, in this day and time, the spiritual makeup of people, of the Bilalian and the general masses, general society, is a big problem. Big problem. And I believe that when this world began as a human world, that was the first development in the human society, the development of the spiritual makeup of the human being. For after all, progress along the other lines of human growth, of society, societal growth, natural, that is, it happens naturally until man himself creates the problem. I don't think man had to have a prophet to come and tell him how to go out and get the beans and bread and meat, whatever he needed, to make it till the next day. I don't think he has to have a prophet to tell him that he needed to build a home to keep the rain off his head. You know? I think those things kind of came naturally. But man needs the prophet when he gets in spiritual trouble to turn the light on again in his life with the guidance of God so that he'll be able to come back to his natural way of behaving. We know that once the spiritual life get out of whack, we seem to be clumsy in meeting the other obligations that are almost animal. Animal obligations. The animal, he knows how to feed his young. The animal knows how to defend his young. The animal knows how to prepare for the winter. You know? So all of these things that we see as necessary for maintaining material life or physical life, they're nothing but just basic functions of nature. So that should tell us that if we have a material problem, it's rooted in a spiritual problem. If we have a political problem, it's rooted in a spiritual problem. So whatever problem we have, in terms of our function as a society, it is because we have gone wrong spiritually. As long as we are on a good footing spiritually, we can manage the natural life pretty well. When we say Bismillah with the name Allah, we are not just speaking sentiments. We recognize the truth. And that truth is that this whole world is not an accident. In the words of the Almighty, it has been created and designed and put in a balance, and it has been made so that we may grow in it. And we have to put our complete trust in that Creator if we expect to understand this world. We'll have the wrong approach to the problems of this world unless we have the right approach to the obligation that we have as creatures in this world. We're not responsible for the sun performing its duty, or the moon, or the clouds, or any of these things upon which our very life exists and has to survive. We are not responsible for those things. We are not responsible for lamb and beef, fish and chicken, and pork, and greens, apples, peaches, cobbler. We're not responsible for all that stuff being here. All we do is look at it and taste it. If we like it, then we start eating it. And if we like it enough, we try to grow a lot of it so we'll never have to do without it. Now, don't we have an obligation? We have an obligation to appreciate the foundations of life, to appreciate the wisdom that is in nature. The primitive man, before his brain saw the light, he was more faithful than the modern man. At least he tried to find who was responsible for all the benefits he found himself in. And he looked at the sun, he said, oh, that's God. Or he looked at the moon, he said, that's God. Or maybe at the river and saw how it brought life and fish. And in the case of the Nile River, rich soil, and deposited on the land so he could grow his food. So he said, oh, the Nile is God. He was sincere, at least, in in acknowledging his obligation to be grateful for benefits that he wasn't responsible for. And on the whole, humanity has been pretty sincere, pretty truthful and pretty sincere, because we know in time man has put down God that failed his expectations. We have the case of Abraham when he was observing the heavenly bodies. He was seeking a concept of his Lord, of God, that would satisfy his soul. He had rejected the concept that his people, his father, and his society had offered to him. He refused to worship dirt and clay, wood and iron that the tribes fashioned into God. Refused to worship them. So he had gone out away from the influences of his immediate society, and he had gotten himself off into the gravity and the influences of the natural world itself. And he was observing the heavenly bodies, and as he observed them, he said, oh, that must be the God. Because they seem to have had a more dignified, a more glorious place in the environment, the physical or natural environment, than those small earthen-made things that his people were worshiping. But as he observed, he saw the sunrise. Finally, he saw the sunrise after seeing other things that said must be a god. So finally, he saw the sunrise. When the sun rose in the morning so gloriously, he said, oh, this must be the Lord. But he observed on. He didn't give up searching. And as the sun set, he said, oh, no, this can't be my Lord. So Abraham, in the words of the Quran, came to the conclusion that the Lord, the real Lord, is not one subject to the limitations that's on his creation. That he is beyond the limitations of his creation. That creation is a servant, and it must have a master. He saw everything else performing a service. He saw nothing in the universe that was independent. He reasoned scientifically that the sun wasn't independent. It's going to go out one day. That if you sleep today, you're going to sleep a final death one day to come. You know? Now, Abraham was correct. Modern-day scientists tell us that the sun is slowly going out. One day it's going to completely become solidified, cool, and will be just a cold mass floating through the universe. That's going to happen one day. Now, it's good that the prophets didn't need the modern-day scientists to tell them those things. Allah says in our Quran, Kullisan, everything you behold with your senses is passing away. Just a matter of time. Illa wajillah, except the reality of God. His manifestation will never go away. But the manifestation of everything else is under change, constant change. And one day will disappear as we see them. And will lose their place and function or role in the great scheme of things we call the universe. Yes. So the prophets, they came to the conclusion with the guidance of God that none of those things are lost. So when we say Bismillah, oh, you must understand what we're saying. We're speaking from faith, but we're speaking in the vein of knowledge and science. La ilaha illallah, wahdahu, la sharika lahu. Nothing worthy of worship but that one, him alone. And nothing can be compared to him. He has no comparison. So, it's saying so and so and so. Can you compare him? No. Ibn Arabi? No. No, no. Muhammad himself? Can you compare him with the God? No. Jesus Christ? No. Imam Wahid-ud-Din Muhammad? No. Nothing can be compared with him. He's too much for us. We are people of faith. Praise be to Allah. This faith we call the religion of Islam distinguished for us the faith gods that God have established for us within our structured life, from the structured life itself. This religion allows us to see faith distinguished from structured life. But it shows us that structured life is dependent upon faith. And God tells us in the Quran, and I say God because I want you to understand who I'm talking about. I wish I had a better English term. If I say the Lord, you might think I'm talking about some Lord that you know, that I don't know. So I say God for want of a better term. I don't like God. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad brought that to my attention. He said, this word dog, or God, when you spell it backwards, it reads dog. And ever since he said that, I have never wanted to use the word God. I always want to use Allah. Because I know now that the term dog in English, or God in English, is connected with the doggish. Doggish. Inclinations in the people of the West. That really they have been given a theology that is designed not to bring them up to the excellence of their nature, but to reduce them to the lowest air. In time. Oh, mister, how can you attack Christian theology like that? Dear beloved people, in just 2 minutes, I'm going to tell you why. Christian theology directs your mind and your devotion, your spiritual devotion, to a human concept called the Son of God, Jesus Christ. And in doing that, it boosts your spiritual growth. Instead of bringing you to universality, it brings you to tribalism, racism, materialism, and selfishness. Yes. So instead of lifting us up to the high peak that God wants us to be on, it operates in us kind of subtly like witch doctor medicine. To eventually bring us to the lowest end of human life. Like we can't call it human life. Now let me point to some developments and hope giving you an example of what I'm talking about. I just read the paper today. And on the front page headline, it says that crime is rising in the cities and in the suburbs. Why? Crime shouldn't be rising. Not now. For the last few months, or maybe almost now half a year, a year or so, America has been breathing the air of God consciousness. Morality has been breathed back out into the air. Respect for the religious institutions has been breathed back into the air. The media have picked up on this, and the media is supporting faith in something bigger than materialism, faith in something bigger than self. The clock has turned us away from the me orientation and has guided us now to look outside of our small and narrow self and our small and narrow concerns to see that there is a Lord, there's a God over everything. Some people say this is brought on by the movement, the new rise of the moral majority, as they call themselves. I don't think so. I think a moral minority have come in and just robbed the common person of the credit that he's due for this rise in moralism, rise in respect for God. This didn't start with no moral majority. The moral majority represents the church. The church didn't come out here in 1975 and battle the spirit of atheism, the spirit of materialism. It was the common man who came out here in 1975 and began battling these evil forces. The church was playing consort, playing girlfriend with these evils. And we came out and denounced all of them. And we haven't let up. I've sat in conferences with the big people of the churches. And I know what they were talking about in 75, 76, 77, 78. They were moving under the influence of expedience, just like they always do. They were talking about what's necessary to keep the status quo, to keep the system intact. But when the common man, not only me, all of us and me, when the common man came out here and began to point the finger at the leadership and at the institution and charge them with the fate of the mass, the life of the masses, they finally got the nerve to come out and themselves denounce the things that they were themselves responsible for. The general masses came to a state of spiritual and moral degeneration that they began to worship clothes, worship shoes with high heels, worship big hats, worship heroin or some other form of narcotics, worship sex. If they came to that state, tell me, who was responsible? Who had that life? Who had their trust? Who had their confidence? Wasn't it the institutions? Yes. And the main one was the church. The church played the greatest role in the confidence of the people. And if the people lost their confidence and went to worshiping those destructive idols in their lives, then who is to blame? Christian is to blame. They say, who shot J.R.? And they finally came out with it and made a big thing over it. Like it was really something, you know, that was real. I thought it was just a soap opera. I thought it was just something belonged to a soap opera. They had a big meeting out there in West somewhere. And called people from all over the country, paid great expenses, went to great expenses, to have a big meeting just to find out who shot J.R. And the answer was, Christian did. That was their pure confession. Who is J.R.? Who is J.R.? J.R. Junior. J.R. is Junior.
Now, who is Junior? Junior is the little man depending on leadership. And without leadership, he becomes a criminal. A tyrant. He dominates the lives of the people. Because he doesn't see the value of human life in society. So he becomes a criminal. He takes over the material power, the material forces. He becomes the dominant. He becomes the demagogue. Yeah. But then who's responsible for this? Look what happened to Junior. Now, who killed him humanly and morally and spiritually? Christian did. Praise be to Allah. Praise be to Allah that our eyes came open before they told us that. So we don't follow them. But we congratulate them for a pure confession. Pure confession. Come to see the human life in its wholeness. In its wholeness. We live a life of disorganization. We live a life of guesswork. We live a life influenced by the tendency to gamble. We have been led by materialism and the bad influences associated with materialism to abandon intelligent living. Now, in addressing you, dear people, today, I have chose to use the term personality in hopes that our talk on personality will bring us to understand the vital life-supporting function of personality in society. Personality is defined as distinct patterns of mind and behavior. Now, the dictionary gives different definitions. But the definition I found that goes directly home to the definition of personality in its truest sense was the one that I took these words from. That is, it represents the distinct behavior pattern in our lives. The way we think, the way we act, that amounts to our individual personality. Now, there's also a term that identifies people in personality. The expression is group personality. Group personality. Society has group personality, and then it has individual personality under group personality, right? Individual personality generally reflects group personality. It's not the bigger one. It's not the ruling personality. The group personality is the ruling personality. The Lord, who
who created everything. Put in us a nature. To accept expansion. To accept bigger dimensions of life and expression. So it is our nature to adopt group personality. That's our nature. Ain't nothing wrong with that. That's the way the Lord made it. We should conform to group personality. Allah, who created everything, He evolved the human being along a natural line of natural growth and progression. And human beings came naturally into the proper group personality. Then man got the hint of the wisdom of the science supporting this manifestation. Then he began to alter group personality. He began to himself make a form group personality. So that the individuals and the society would be enslaved and be subject to whatever influence he wanted to direct them by. I ain't talking about no mysteries. I'm talking about the fact of your life now. Then the struggle for the believer is the struggle against the effort on the part of the guilty one to take the human society out of their natural personality and put them into slavish personalities. What I mean by that, you have no control yourself over your personality. Your personality is not the result of your effort. Your personality is formed just like the uprooted thing, or the displaced thing, formed in the society. I'm talking about the physical environment now. A plant that is uprooted, the wind casts it. It might find itself on the riverbed. It might find itself in the sand. It might find itself on a treetop. On a roof, or maybe even on a mountain. But it has no say-so over where it will be tomorrow. It ain't rooted in nothing. It has fallen or been knocked out of place, so the strongest force that come along decides where it will be tomorrow. Now, isn't our life kind of like that? In this material-supported cultural mind that Americans have, isn't our life just like a dead leaf in the wind? Or dust cast about by the wind? We don't know where it's going to fall. We don't know where it's going to be. And most of us, we have no permanence in life above animal description. An animal knows where it's going to graze tomorrow. You know where you're going to punch your clock tomorrow. An animal knows where it's going to go to bed tomorrow. You know where you're going to go to bed tomorrow. An animal knows where it's going to get its sex. You know where you're going to get your sex. All right? But your plans are no bigger than that. You just want to graze, lay, and have a big time on that level. I'm talking about the average citizen of this country. I thank the Lord that in this day and time, I don't have to say this and bear the crushing weight on my heart that my people are the only one that fit that decision. They say what goes around, come around. And they sent us around so many times till it finally came around to them. Yes. So we are not describing us. We are describing the poor, misguided, unattended Jews in this society. I thank the Lord I ain't a junior no more. I'm a senior. That's right. And those who embrace what I talk about, they become seniors too. Right. A junior is the one who responds to creation. And he allows the demands of creation on his life to set and determine his life. The seniors, they respond to the Creator. And they visualize with his guidance a plan that enables them to determine the state and future of the physical matter. Yes, with his help. We can't do it without the help of Allah, but with his help, we can do that. We don't worry about how we're going to eat tomorrow. We don't have animal fears. We don't live in a consciousness on the animal level. Our energies are not tied up in getting bread tomorrow, lamb chop, bean soup, rye bread or black bread or whatever. Our energies are not tied up in that. Our energies are tied up in keeping the vessel of humanity from falling into the hands of the slave master. People will enslave us under the yoke of materialism, lust, vulgarity, violence, and destruction. Yes, those forces are waiting to enslave us. And we know it. Allah has said to his servants that if you serve me, you will eat. Allah never told a prophet, look, be aware, there's going to be a shortage of pork chop. There's going to be a shortage of lamb chop. Going to be a shortage of apples. That's what the economists do. Those never did nothing like that. They tell you there's going to be a shortage of good sense on the part of the individual. Because we see the workings of the devil. He's coming with his forces to take away the intelligence from the command of the individual. They come to alert us to the threat on our intelligence so that we will keep our intelligence. Now, who is better for you? The one who will feed you like an animal or the one who will feed you like a man? The prophets come to feed your manhood. The leaders of this world come to feed your animal appetite. Oh, you're like, oh, but brother, ma'am, that's not true. Look what the founding fathers did. Look at the democracy we have built. And consider how much better you are. You're off as an American. You are off as an American than you would be if you were some other native, some other national. Okay, all that's good. I'm not going to give you any mouth for that. But what we overlook is the fact that those contributors to the good life of the human being were following the same thing that I'm trying to get you to see right now. There's no credit to them except in the sense that they had the goodness, the moral strength to follow what God had sent his prophets for. Yes. Consider Russia. Or any true communist society. And by the way, Russia is losing a lot of its real communistic makeup. Losing it to the moth of time. Oh, yes. But consider the life in those societies where they claim to be representing the justice or the rights of the common man. And we claim the same, don't we? But look what they give man to live by. They tell man that this creation of the matter is constantly undergoing a change that is brought about by the very nature of the matter itself. It is evolving life, expanding matter, and evolving life. And man being part of this, no different than any other matter, he's just another part of it. Man being part of this, he's also being advanced too. He's also being pushed forward by this process. They give man a concept like this, a concept of a natural process that occurred by accident. They don't know how, what started it. All they know is it started. And once it started, it was its nature to continue like that. It has no purpose except that. And that it is evolving man to become more like the natural phenomena itself. It is bringing man to conform to the natural phenomena. So matter has this nature. Production has this nature. Since the human being must eat, he must have clothes, he must have shelter, he must have material things to live with, live by, then he too must live under the concept of this natural growth, this dynamic. This natural dynamic in matter. So his whole life now, his cultural life, his spiritual life, must now be dictated by the belief in this natural phenomenon. They call it dialectic materialism, where materialism is under constant strain and stress. And the fact of the strain and stress accounts for the consequences, the results. And that man is to study his life just as he would study the farm. Just as he would study the lake that he's trying to cultivate some fish in. Or just as he would study the physical season, winter, spring, summer, fall. Or just as he would study physical diseases in his body. He is to see it that way. And he is to plan in response to what nature is doing. Isn't this communism? He is to plan in response to what nature is doing. So what have they done? They have brought man below animal. Because the animal, he does that, but on a plane that has evolved him and also has secured him. Man ain't secured in no concept like that. That has to be enforced. They have to use might, the power of the gun, to enforce that on man. That's not something that man accepts readily. That's something that has to be enforced upon man. Something that has to be compelled. Something that has to be executed against the human will. Man doesn't want his moral life, his spiritual aspirations shattered.
and reduced to some physical mold that can be defined completely in terms of physical science, physics, chemistry, etc.? No. That's why Russia is failing. That's why Russia couldn't get to the moon before America. It wasn't because America was better, morally.